Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Emily Wittige, and I'm the Community Engagement Coordinator here at Syracuse University. I would like to begin, as we do with all Syracuse University events, by acknowledging with respect the Onondaga Nation, fire keepers of the Haudenosaunee, the Indigenous people on whose ancestral lands Syracuse University now stands. Before I introduce this morning's speaker, I want to thank everyone for being flexible and patient with us as we transition TMR to a virtual platform. I am now honored to introduce this morning's speaker, Adam Sundman. Adam Sundman is the market manager at Sault City Market, a food hall and public market opening in downtown Syracuse in January 2021. Adam began his career in food and events in 2001, directing and planning events for New York City's oldest organic caterer, the Cleaver Company. In 2008, he moved into event direction for the Fat Radish Silkstone Group, primarily for fashion, auction, and champagne houses. Between work time and fun time, hitchhiking through India, Cameroon, Morocco, et cetera, in the off months, he got the idea for a multinational food court. That idea simmered for years, then Eureka hit when visiting Syracuse's north side on a snowy day, seeing families from Congo and Nepal out braving the snow, grocery bags bulging. In 2012, he began My Lucky Tummy pop-up series, drawing talent from some 30-plus countries and regularly topping 400 guests. In 2016, he opened OCC's With Love, an entrepreneur incubator and teaching restaurant, featuring a new cuisine every 6 months, serving up the foods of Pakistan, Burma, Savannah, Georgia, Palestine, Vietnam, and most recently, Somalia. His role at Sault City Market feels like kismet. It's his job to scour the city to find talented, driven people who want to open up a food business, help train and audition candidates through a year-long process, and ultimately help build a vital piece of cultural infrastructure for Syracuse. Please join me in welcoming this morning's speaker, Adam Sutton.
Hi, everyone. I'm Adam. So I'm the market manager over at Sault City Market, and I'm here to talk to you a little bit about that project today, which, as Emily mentioned, really does feel like kismet. It's a really awesome thing to be involved in, and feel extraordinarily laugh out loud lucky that I get to do this. So we are located, in case folks aren't familiar, we are currently a construction site located at the corner of West Onondaga and South Salina, right across from the Hotel Syracuse downtown. If you were going down Harrison, coming down the hill from SU, you can't help but see us. We're like a big green box right now. That's just the insulation. Be a better color. My kids really like the green, but I think it'll be this very chic black when we're all said and done here. And it looks like we'll be all said and done in January. So, or actually December, and then we'll open up in January. Anyhow, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, as Emily mentioned, Sault City Market is a public market and food hall. And it is a project here of a number of different like-minded agencies. We've got Center State CEO coming together with the Allen Family Foundation and a newly formed nonprofit called Syracuse Urban Partnership, which does make a nice little acronym. And we have we're an acronymy town, so we got one of those going with Syrup. And Sault City Market is the first project underneath Syrup. It is the, I think what we'll always probably consider the flagship project, but really the idea here is to bring together neighborhoods and have a meeting place, but also to open up, hopefully down the line, future projects in various neighborhoods throughout Syracuse. And so if you'll see, hopefully that will this following along here with my scrolling through, but we were really intentional in identifying this location, that little black wedge there in the middle of all these different adjacent neighborhoods. Really felt like a natural crossroads for people coming very close from the near west side, the south side, certainly over on the east side, and then a downtown, which a resurgent downtown. You'll have to keep in mind, I mean, as we keep in mind daily, that we are going through something unprecedented and unanticipated, but we're thinking that you know, in the near to not so near future, this will be even more sort of opposite and essential and vital. So we are, you know, we're struggling with a few things right now with this current crisis, but when we do struggle, I think we come back to our vision and mission, which is really a two-pronged sort of a thing, which is that agora, that meeting place for people from different neighborhoods, from different sides of Syracuse. One of the things that I noticed when coming here from Brooklyn was there's enormous amounts of talent and interesting people and culture, but really tucked away, you know, that we do tend to, I think, exist in silos. And having that common meeting space, that common crossroads, as it were, could be really, really interesting and really, I think, powerful. The other part of the mission is this notion of building generational wealth, people doing that through doing something that they love, so that something that they hold very close to their hearts, which is sharing culture, sharing food. Food is this incredibly, you know, powerful and really sweet vector that really connects people. I think now more than ever, as we've watched, you know, in the last 20 years or so, people get that much more curious about other cultures through food. And I've watched it. I've been in food for 30 years now. My old offices were right below the Food Network. And we used to joke and laugh at the Food Network and the celebrities walking around and some of the sort of hijinks they did. But like, they did do some amazing work in terms of how they positioned food to be this sort of offering, this cultural sort of bridge that we get to now make in this market. I will also say that for all the wonderful parts of food, it's a damn hard business. And there's a saying that, you know, how do you make a small fortune in the restaurant business? Well, you start with a large fortune, right? We are working with communities that don't have a large fortune, right? At least in terms of material wealth. And it can be really, really hard to start a business. It's even harder to keep that restaurant going. I think one of my hardest memories in this town was starting an incubator project called With Love over on the north side and trying to get someone to incubate with us, someone that I considered a friend and a really cool person. Was actually had come here as a refugee from Afghanistan, and he was responsible for his brother who has had stepped on a landmine and was really, you know, they'd opened up a restaurant together, and he didn't want to go into the incubator. He said, you know what, I'm going to do it myself. I'm going to, you know, get this thing going, bet everything on it. And it didn't work. And one of the last times I sat with him before he left the country was sitting around one sort of wicked winter morning, his apartment above the restaurant, you know, talking about how why this didn't work and how he wished he'd, you know, taken a different path. And it's so easy to get into a lot of trouble doing this what should be a really wonderful thing. So we wanted to get ahead of that a little bit and make it a little bit easier for people to open up and stay open with a restaurant. There is still risk involved in our model. There has to be. But we make it a lot less risky, and we take out some of the arbitrary risks that people face when opening up a restaurant. So we are getting to a little bit about the building itself. We are a four-story building, 75,000 square feet. That bottom floor, wrapped in glass, is the food hall. That's the piece de resistance. Floor two is office space. Floors three and four are mixed income housing, true mixed income housing, 26 units. And it's partly because of that mixed income housing, or maybe entirely because of that we were deemed essential through this crisis. So construction kept going on the site. We never stopped. It's gone actually quite smoothly, the construction process. We did have a little hiccup the other day. There's something called a switchgear that's stuck in Texas. It's this massive piece of equipment that controls electricity to the building. And my vote was to open up without electricity. I thought, heck, why not? but apparently people are really into it. I'm really excited about opening up on time, but people love the electricity. So we're going to be opening up in January. I put a little note in this the other day here to alter the timeline, which is 2020 is 100% smooth sailing and no surprises all year long. So that's, I think, that's my theme for 2020. We'll see how that pans out. But we are going to be opening up in January. It is that's a tricky time to open up a restaurant, but I don't really view this as a restaurant so much. I view it as a, yes, there are restaurants, but it's quite a large space to walk around, stretch your legs, meet people from all over. We will have to really take a really hard look at like how many people are allowed into the building. I think we're zoned for 400, north of 400. So even if you're at 50% or less, still quite a bit of space to spread out. Here's a few renderings of the building too, so you get an idea of what I'm talking about. If you were coming down from Harrison today, this would be very green, but this is eventually what it'll look like. And like I had mentioned before, that whole bottom floor is wrapped in glass. And so it ends up being this billboard for all the folks inside. When I show you the interior shot, you'll see, or a rendering of the interior shot, let's just go scroll down to that. You'll see one of the major investment that our folks have put in terms of capital investment to the project. By our folks, I mean the vendors themselves, is they have these massive, bright, popping billboards, as it were, above their stalls. So you really get a sense of this is who is in here, this is their culture, this is their aesthetic. The ethos here, I think the mindset really was, we didn't want people to constantly be reminded of our brand going in, but we wanted people to take off with their own brand and really have a sense of almost a little bit of controlled chaos, you know, a lot of color, a lot of excitement. And that is really, you know, like I said before, that is the major investment that folks are putting into their stalls. We do provide what we call in the restaurant industry turnkey stalls for these businesses. And so they're really ready to go. We buy all of the equipment, or the heavy equipment. I sort of tell folks, if it takes two of us to lift it, we'll buy it. Anything that you can lift on your own, you have to buy. Somebody the other day was like citing back problems and said like, can you, I was like, no, that whisk, you can handle that whisk. I'm not buying that. There's this notion, I think we were modeling this largely off of a project out of Minneapolis called the Midtown Global Market, and their philosophy, and they've been doing this for 20 years and they really know what they're doing. But one departure that we had from Midtown Global Market was they really prize equity. People build out their stalls over there, over in Minneapolis. They've got a lot more skin in the game in that respect. I really pushed to have it go a different way. I really wanted to keep the threshold to entry really, really low. And so our rents are in the hundreds, at least for this initial stage, for the first three-year contract. We've kept everyone's rent is below $1,000. In a couple of instances, well below $1,000. And everything is built out for people. They still provide their smallwares, that signage up top that really makes it their own. Obviously, their staff and their foods and their independent businesses. But part of what I think wanted to keep the threshold low is that I faced a lot when I was out in the sort of neighborhoods, which is for most of 2019, I would bop around all over Syracuse. I was in, you know, say what was on my agenda today, and it was to go to this barbershop and this bodega and this grocery store and just walk this street and sort of pester strangers, essentially trying to get them interested in this concept. And I had a nice looking postcard, and I had a nothing in terms of a building. We just had a parking lot that wasn't even fenced off. People were still parking there. So, you know, one of the first questions people asked, well, the first question was, what's the rent and is this really happening? You know? And so we felt like, you know, to have that lead time to really work with people to cultivate these nascent businesses, these nascent concepts, before I had a lot of people self-select out because they didn't trust it because they thought this seems too high a hurdle or this just doesn't even seem like this is going to happen. I heard a lot of that. We'll see if this happens. You know, there's a lot of distrust, a lot of disbelief. One of the ways to sort of signal to folks that they should trust it was to have low grant and low threshold getting in. So I think that we did that worked relatively well. We got quite a lot of interest when we were going through this sort of broadcasting it to the community. So I'm going to talk a little bit less about the building right now and a little bit about that process. And so I was hired in the first part of 2019 from my previous position over at With Love. If anybody's heard of that restaurant, it was a restaurant over on the north side of North Salina Street near the intersection with Butternut that platformed somebody new every 6 months. Different cuisine, someone offering a new national cuisine. And it was really wraparound sort of technical assistance. People really got to get to feel what it felt like to run a restaurant. We had the luxury to move them around from position to position. So you had to play general manager, you had to play dishwasher, you had to play, you know, had to get on the line, you had to be up front. And we'd sort of cycle people through the entire operation of a full service sit down restaurant. And it was really cool, except that, well, I put it in terms of, I use hospital metaphors a lot, maybe because we're at the heels of St. Joe's, but I looked at With Love as the ICU, right? If something went wrong, we were there. We had a lot of support around you. And then you, right after the ICU, we said, you know, well, go run a restaurant and probably the restaurant, you know, will help you find real estate and there'll be some supports, but you'll probably end up in a neighborhood that's hard to find. You know, you won't be on the main drag and you've got to get your name out there. And essentially, you know, speaking metaphors again, you know, you've got to run a marathon while also sprinting, while also juggling knives, you know, it's, and that's not usually what you do after leaving the ICU, right? You have a step down. You graduate into something that's a little bit easier to navigate. Running a restaurant on its own and even getting people to know that you're there is an enormous task. And I can't imagine, you know, I just try to put myself in my friend's Askar's shoes, and it's like if you snapped your fingers and I could speak Pashto and you put me in Afghanistan tomorrow and said, you know, oh, go open a restaurant in a terrain and a culture that you're not entirely familiar with. I don't know what I would do. I mean, I know what I would do. It wouldn't last very long, right? And so the With Love model really needed somewhere to off ramp to. And that's very much how we see this experience. It's still, people are still independent businesses. They still have skin in the game. They still have risk, but it's a lot more, it's safer. A little more control. We've taken some of the variables out. So the food merchant process. I'd mentioned a little bit about, you know, walking through snowy Syracuse, pestering strangers. And that's really what it was for a couple of months. Trying to get on people's radar, trying to gain people's trust, their curiosity. One of the ways we did that was we worked with a translation company over on the north side because we know a lot of people, you know, one of the ways that we are divided is by our languages, the languages we speak. And if you want to get a meme out there, an opportunity out there, you've got to my mind, marshal the sort of rumor factories of people that don't necessarily speak English as their first language. So if I can get people, you know, even if that person isn't the person, maybe they are, maybe they're not, at least I can get this notion in their head and start sort of getting people talking. I kind of joke, but I had this enormous, awful, really terrible looking green hat that I would wear in the wintertime. And people would always approach me after a couple of months and say, oh, you're that strange big guy with the green hat walking around our neighborhood that's been talking with everybody about this. And I've heard about you. And I figured like if I had that sort of green hat on, they'd know how to find me. People would know how to find me. And so I was, you know, after a couple of months, I found like the rumor had really gotten around. People had heard of this opportunity. We put flyers all over the place. We were particularly on the south side, the north side, and the west side, just moving around, talking to a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds, trying to get the idea out there. And once I'd done a couple of months of outreach, we held information sessions all over the city, in all different neighborhoods. It can be so, the reason that people don't take advantage of an opportunity can be so simple. And one of the simple reasons that we sort of learned the hard way before going to this project was sometimes you're just having your info session in a part of town that people aren't familiar with, you know, that they don't feel comfortable with. So go to places that people know and feel comfortable with. So we were held information sessions in different neighborhoods, always had like donuts or coffee and really pushed that because, you know, you just signal. Again, you're using food to signal like this is a low key, fun kind of thing. How scary can it be if I'm providing donuts, right? So a lot of people came out. I forget how many we had, but I mean, it was well over 200 over the half dozen or so sessions that we had. And I knew even then, like, I'm only getting a small sliver of people, right? Because it is such happenstance that somebody happens to hear about this opportunity. And it's going to take a while to sort of, you know, probably take years, you know, you'll have to sort of, for a lot of folks, you might not hear about it until there's an actual building, or once you've got a track record going, you start to, you know, maybe you went there with friends, or maybe you heard that somebody's built a business out of here. So I knew that even with that 200, that's a very small portion of the people that had this dream of opening up a food business. Now that said, I don't want to be a dream killer, but it's good to kill a dream. It's good to sort of be a reality check. And so in these information sessions, a lot of people came to these sessions and they said, oh, that's what's involved. Okay, well, thanks for the donut, right? And I would rather have something like thanks for the donut and somebody walking away and chewing on it, maybe deciding this isn't for them, or they have to mull it over for a few more months or years, than somebody jumping in. Because I gave you that one example, but I've seen other examples of people jumping in and it's without giving it a lot of thought. I think not to pop psychologize here, but I've seen people go in for it and they just, part of that thing, you know, I think we've all do it sometimes, is this is so intimidating and so scary. Some of these, particularly the parts with the regulatory bodies and the permits that I have to get, and the legal structures that have to be in place, that, you know what, I'm not going to think about that. I'm just going to jump in. So there's this, and sometimes that instinct I think works well for us, and sometimes that can get us in a lot of trouble. So in these sessions, we have people slow down, really consider what's at stake here, all the steps they need to be going through. And we ended up with some people come that, you know, weren't scared and did it anyway, right? And so we had, I think if I count right, 20 people through two different cohorts that we'd formed in the spring and the fall of 2019, knowing that, you know, some of the people coming around in the fall, maybe just because it is such an odd thing to hear about it or not hear about it, we wouldn't get enough traction in spring. We'd have to sort of keep it going. And I'm sure if we kept going through 2020 with more cohorts, we'd find more people that hadn't heard about this opportunity. I can't tell you how many people have reached out to me. Just even had somebody reach out last week and I thought, oh, you're amazing. You know, I wish we'd talked earlier, you know, but we found some really, really cool, driven, talented people to try out for the market. And so when I say try out, I mean, a 10-step audition process. And when I say audition, I mean, I don't just mean audition, I mean sort of cultivating people and bouncing them. We sort of designed this 10-step process to bounce between what I'll, you know, sort of call book learning, you know, working with Upstart, which is an entrepreneur project out of Center State, to work on your business plan, you know, 12-week, we're sitting in a classroom, we're going over the parts of best practices and SOPs and building up a business plan and achieving fundability, which can, you know, frankly get a little bit abstract or a lot abstract to people that, you know, signed up because they like to be in the kitchen. They like to be, you know, social creatures, right? We'd bounce between that and actual practice. And so our first practice round for everybody was what we call a multinational pop-up, right? We'd have a an event with a lot of people squished into a small room, you know, 400 people squished into a small room, which sounds terrible right now, but it was really, you have to trust me, it was really great to have these kinds of events. And that first pop-up would be, we'd support you quite a lot, right? We'd give you a stipend to buy your ingredients, we'd provide the kitchen, we'd provide, you know, a lot of counseling on how to scale your recipe, which recipe to choose for your sample. Guests would come, they would vote, we'd get a sense of the cut of your jib, right? Were you someone that was brilliant in the interview and said, you know what, I can't hack this, I can't be on my feet this long, or I fall apart in the fray? We got to really see how people behaved in a, you know, somewhat high pressure environment. And then we would just repeat this process in a way. Each time we'd pull back a little bit. So we'd have these individual events that people would take part in. And then, you know, they would have their own money in play. And what I really liked about these, we had a couple of community organizations, Westcott Community Center and Cafe Sankofa Cooperative host us. And people would essentially set up a, I don't want to say a lemonade stand, but really, you know, we'd pop up and see who would come, you know, how much you could promote it, how many people would show up, how smoothly that operation ran. And you'd see, hey, I get a little practice for this stall opening, see how it goes. And we were constantly evaluating people, they were evaluating us, you know, because we're also trying to improve our practice and to see how everyone sort of shook out. And it's a really great chance to see, oh, have a little glimpse of how that would go in a stall. You know, how that process, you know, where that person's weaknesses are. And we really encouraged everyone. We said, you know, we really need you to be transparent with us about where you're struggling. It can't just be about getting into the stall. We don't want you to get into the stall. We want you to stay in the stall. We want this to, you know, getting in the stall might feel like a great prize. It is. It's really awesome. But it's still possible to get in trouble. It's still possible to fail. We want to make sure that all of us, have really, you know, reflected on this and made sure that you are in a position where you can get in that stall and stay in that stall and really make something wonderful for you and your family. A lot of people would liken this, you know, as we were doing this, they would liken it to a reality show. And I would laugh sometimes, but the one area where I would sort of hedge a little bit is, think the ethos of the reality show is, well, two things. They love the drama, right? Actually, my old career, I've worked with a couple of reality shows down in New York City. And I know that there were specific interventions to make things go wrong, you know, and to increase the drama. We try to keep that on the low. But the more important distinction was reality shows treat people as disposable, right? Once you're voted off the island, that's it. You're a memory, right? If someone is, you know, doesn't make it through all 10 steps of our process. You know, when we winnow down the group as we go, we don't say no to people so much as we say, not yet, right? But we want to keep working with you. We want to see if there's other ways that you can, you know, work within this hall or outside of this hall. And so there's a, you know, I would say working across a number of different small business development agencies in town, there's this real notion of, yes, you know, we're disappointed. We know you're disappointed when you don't make it into a stall, but if you're really committed to this idea, this of having a food business, we want to help you do that. We want to keep working with you. And we've done that, you know, I'm looking across this group successfully. Some of the folks that didn't get into the hall have done collaborations with some of our stall tenants just in the past couple months. And this month, now that I think about it, still staying with, you know, in dialogue with us, still working on their business, using this With Love space that we've recently secured to hold pop-ups there. I'll give you a little graphic here of the 10-step process. So one really cool part of the process, and I know this is hard to read, but we sort of had this flyer go about town as well, which is the 10-step process with the classes and the auditions, but it all ends with a field trip. And we thought, how cool would it be if everybody that once we let them know that they're in the market in early January of this year, let's all go down to New York City and essentially restaurant hop, right? Now, this is a couple weeks before things went crazy. So we still thought we were in the sane world. We were. And it was a really wonderful thing to, you know, get to put together that spreadsheet. I remember I spent a full day on it, the spreadsheet of all these restaurants that we wanted people to check out to see other examples of cuisine and design and really, you know, sort of stir their creative juices. And to, I don't think I'll ever forget that trip. All of us packed into this big van, very windy on the ride down, thinking we might, you know, in February, thinking we might not make it. I think we were around Preble or something when the wind blew me into another lane. But it was an awesome way to sort of thank people for going through this process and to really, you know, say, signal, you know, we value your business so much that we want to take a field trip to see what else is up there going on and get inspiration. So that was the sort of cap on our process here. Real quickly, I should wrap up pretty soon here. So sorry, I get chatty about this, Emily. My favorite thing to talk about. Through our training process, this is just a quick way of saying we went through, we really tried to do a 360 on everything you would need to know about running a food business within the market or on your own. And, you know, since COVID struck, if you really had time, if we had another couple hours, I would show you the Google Doc that we all share as all the food merchants in the hall share. It is essentially every single week we are on a Zoom together with an industry expert or someone that is bringing us something that we need to hone our business. And that could be everything from payroll to HR to a negotiation specialist to a marketing specialist to, you know, other people working in the field that want to give us sort of, you know, stories of what worked, what didn't work, talk shop a little bit. We, you know, every single week we've been on with somebody giving us a new lens to look through. And they are, you know, they're surrounded by people. You know, I think our next call is a QuickBooks online person versus a QuickBooks desktop advocate, you know. So they've been really make it so everyone's been shown all the tools that they, you know, all the sort of tools that they could access and really take away surprises, you know. There can, you know, a lot of surprises or worrying about where you're at financially, which is, I think, is where a lot of people live. Trying to lift the veil there and have a real aware, you know, weekly awareness of where that business is at. We're really striving for that. And I think we set people up for that in a good way. So this gives you a little bit of let's see what else I got here. I've gone off the script slightly, but now I'm buffering. So hopefully it'll clear up here. Yeah, so we've got the pop-ups that we've had, these started classes that we've had. I will just tell you a funny story. On the last day of January, we'd had our series of interviews with finalists, and I asked our Meg, who heads up the foundation, but she'd asked me, how are you gonna let everybody know? And I said, oh, I'll just send them an email, you know, that they got into the market. And she just gave me this look that I'll never forget of, you have no style. You know, that's so an email after a whole year and a half or year, which was, you know, trying to get into this market. And so we ended up calling everyone and saying, you know, we have a follow-up interview. Come to the office. We just have a couple more questions, you know. And so everybody walked into the office. And, you know, we had a champagne tower, which probably tipped our hand a little bit. Usually don't have champagne. I don't know if anybody here has had a champagne tower at their final interview, but, it, you know, you sort of show your hand a little bit there. So it was a lot of screaming and tears, and people were pretty excited. And so these are all the brands, the individuals and the businesses that are moving on into the market, if everybody can see that. So as you can see, we've got, you know, we've really got food from all over. We've had recently two more vendors join us. One is Farm Girl and Catalpa Flowers, which is a collaboration. It's going to go in one of our smaller stalls. And one of our bigger stalls, there's a fellow out in Fairmount, or he was out in Fairmount. His name is Faraz. He's still working on his logo. So I thought I'd throw in this picture the other day that we took. We were trying to orchestrate this photo shoot in Baghdad. and it was a bit of a, you know, his friends were downtown, and that statue behind the fellow you see is called Karamana, and we wanted to get a picture of that statue for his sign band. And so, you know, I'm talking to him, he's talking to his friends over WhatsApp, saying, no, walk west a few, you know, try to get it from this angle, and, you know, because there weren't any, like, high-def pictures online that we could use. I don't know, I just put that picture in because it just felt like the world felt very small in that moment. So they're also joining us. And I'll give you one last shot here of the market floor. Just macro out for a little bit. If you were flying over the floor, you'd see this in the center there, we have something called the Forum. Got a lot of, those are where all the stalls live. On the north end is blue. So if you're moving north along Salina Street, that blue section is Salt City Bar. So it's Salt City Coffee, which is up the street on West Onondaga, is opening up a second location that also turns into a bar later in the day. Though I say that, like, the way that 2020 is going, I thought we could change into the bar like 8 a.m., 9 a.m., but they're still debating when that transition will happen. And then you got Syracuse Cooperative Market up in the university area, which is keeping its current location, but is opening up a larger location in our market in March. On the south end of the building, they're a little closer to Onondaga Street. On that south end of the building, you've also got what you see, sort of a rectangle there. That's a community space. So we have quite a lot of space to open up and expand out. On the north end of the blue Salt City Bar there, you've got a 35-foot gap between us and the building next door. So there's going to be this great landscaped alfresco dining, which I know is a rarity downtown, and could be a huge, huge asset for us as we, you know, navigate these current waters. I'm going to wrap up. Ask me any questions you've got.
So first question for you, how many restaurants would be open at once? And then with that, are they all food stalls, or will you consider other shops in collaboration with the food stalls if it turns out the number of diners is spread out too thin among multiple restaurants?
Yeah, so I should mention, there's a lot of different answers to that. So there'll be 10, well, there's 8 full food stalls with Hood, right? And that's those sort of 8 restaurants. There's 2 other businesses in there. There's one that's a bakery, sort of a cupcake bakery, cupcake cake operation, and the juice and flower shop. We will have opportunities for something called the day table program, which is what they run out of Minneapolis, which is people can come in and sell different wares, you know, whether that's crafts or artisan type wares. We'll layer that in. We're still debating about, like, how we layer that in. Additionally, to draw more people into the site and really sort of showcase this as a site that is welcome for everybody, we're coming up with and refining an events program where we bring people into the building for specific targeted events. And Midtown does this over in their, what we call, like, their shoulder hours, right? So there might be daytime events for families. There might be cooking classes. We have something, we have a teaching kitchen in one corner of the building that's a fully built out permitted kitchen for someone to teach a class, whether that's in person or over Zoom. Early this morning, I was on a call with someone about doing baking classes for kids, you know, on, say, Wednesdays. My 8-year-old is a huge advocate of this. She's like, I will watch that on Zoom if we can bake together. In the middle of this, you know, when we got that limbo time for kids on Wednesdays, particularly in the school district. So there will be, again, TBD, some kind of program that for these day tables for crafts, artisan foods, that type of thing.
Great. What's the current status of With Love Restaurant? Is it still operational?
So the current status is, you'll see how strategic I am here. We signed a lease on the space 2 weeks before the pandemic came and shut everything down. Pretty impressive, right? So we have an arrangement now with OCC where OCC had wanted to partner with this and sort of see if this space could function in a different way while still supporting entrepreneurs. I think there were good things and bad things about the particular model that had come through there with the 6 month turnaround with everyone. There's some really brilliant things about it. And it was actually based off a program, I based it off a program out called Conflict Kitchen out in Pittsburgh, that was also run through an educational institution, I think Carnegie Mellon maybe. But anyway, they would feature a new cuisine that we were in conflict with every 6 months. And so they would bounce from Iran to Venezuela. They had these really cool, you know, back when Zoom was a really esoteric thing, you know, you'd have a Zoom meal with someone in Tehran at the same time that you were eating. And, you know, they were doing at the time really innovative, really cool stuff. And I remember talking with them about how that can be an exhausting sort of a turnaround to have to switch over your menu every 6 months and find new, you know, they were working with the same core team. We were cycling through new talent every 6 months. So I think just got to be too much trying to sort of locate that person after they'd left the program as well. And so what we're doing is we're twisting things around a little bit we're trying things out with Love. We hold a number of pop-ups there for our folks to get practice. We got a series actually in November and December of what we call this Takeout Friday series that did really well in our audition process back in the day. And we also operate as a commissary kitchen for rent. And again, we lack such a thing. I've lost track of how many people have come to me over the time I've been in Syracuse and said, I'm looking for a kitchen. I'm looking for a kitchen. You know, I just need somewhere official to do what I'm doing. I also know a lot of people that sell their food on Facebook and they make it at home. And that is a thriving trade here at Syracuse. And what I really wanted to do was position with Love as a place to sort of coax you out of that, to say, you're doing that, you know, you can't do that sort of effectively, safely, legally. I want to woo you away from that. And how can we do that? We can provide this great kitchen. We can provide a push in terms of marketing behind it. And let's keep, you know, massage the math here a little bit so we can keep the alum, but it's also cheaper, you know, so it lowers that barrier of entry for people to get started there. And it's a great place. You know, a lot of people that I worked with at, you know, with Love or the My Lucky Tummy pop-ups that I used to produce back in the day. Somebody was in from Iran just yesterday and she wanted a place to make she makes these brilliant jams, particularly doing things out of her home. And she's been looking to scale up and become official. And so this is a great way to do so without it becoming, you know, either financially onerous or you just not knowing how to navigate all the paperwork. We'll take you through the paperwork. We'll just smooth that out and make that a little less scary. So it is currently functioning, long way of sending. It is a commissary kitchen and pop-up space that we are using as a pipeline for the market or to cultivate talent outside of the market.
Great, thank you. I think you believe.
Oh, and not for nothing. But we, right after the, oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I will just say that right after the pandemic hit, we were pretty supple. We actually participated in a crowdsourcing effort. We were actually able to belt out thousands and thousands of meals out of the place for people facing food insecurity and working with community partners to do so. So we've made good use of it.
Great. Thank you. I believe you briefly checked on it, but how many people can be accommodated in like the community space there? And obviously that'll change with COVID guidelines.
Yeah, putting COVID aside for the moment, I don't have the numbers on the tip of my tongue from the fire department, but I think it's around 120.
Will other downtown anchors such as Red House,
okay, cool,
the hotel, the museum, be integrated into the market some way?
Yeah, it would be crazy to not view ourselves, you know, I don't think we think of ourselves as an island, right? And so I've actually talked with Everson and Red House just in the last couple of days about collaborating on things. Everson, Central Library, Red House, I mean, just this week alone, that's who I've talked to about collaborating on events and different types of campaigns and cool stuff. So absolutely, yeah, we are, you know, we're strongest when we're, you know, together.
Great, thank you. How will the model take lessons learned from the economic effects of COVID to protect the restaurant owners and the restaurant workers, if there are shutdowns or something like that.
Yeah, so I think we're a little bit lucky. We've had some lag time between, when this first hit in February and when we're opening up almost a year later, right? So we have the benefit of getting to see how everyone else has responded. So I have calls weekly with people. I mean, last night I was on the phone with some folks from Grand Central out in LA, which is a food hall out there that has found some cool solutions to how their vendors can thrive in this new climate, right? So the first way is to just talk with other places and see what they're doing, see what solutions they've found. I think the second way is, there are some new things with COVID. There's also some things that aren't new, that they're just accelerated. So you're looking at something like the trends of ghost kitchens or food aggregators in terms of the delivery scene and how behaviors have been changing, and that just amped up very quickly. But it was nothing entirely new. It'd be too boring to go into the details, really, but we're working with sort of technology, sort of partners, sort of corporate partners, to look at how we might sort of bring down some of the costs for people to embrace delivery, but still be able to make money doing so. We've got some market-wide protocols in terms of how we message and signal and have practices around having a clean, space. And that's going to be really prominent when we've got a new website that we're launching in about 3 weeks. So how we signal to our community around that. We tend to think that if we can do some of those things, learn from other people, solve some of these problems around delivery and curbside, signal the cleanliness and really double down on the shields, the janitorial aspect of this building, that will help a lot. We're already starting off, I tend to think in a pretty place, having a large new space, 22-foot ceilings, already designed for large groups of people, that we can, even when we have those groups or less, it can still feel like a space that you can go into and feel, like a relatively safe venture.
Great, thank you. What are the hours, anticipated hours, that the building and the stalls will be open?
So the hours that I'm positing right now are 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and 11 to 5 p.m. Sunday. If you go downtown on a Sunday right now, you don't see a lot going on. Or not, even let's say a year ago, right? I know now has its own troubles, but if you went at 3 p.m. on a Sunday, you wouldn't see a lot of economic activity downtown, right? Particularly at our end of the downtown area. Talking with vendors, originally we thought, we'll follow the model of a Cafe Cubal or Original Gray and close around at 1 or 2. But a lot of our vendors said, churches on the south side are getting out at 2:30, and you're just closing your doors then. So we're listening to our vendors and we're saying, okay, let's open up longer. Let's see if we can woo people going to Erie Boulevard, come to our place. So because of the scale of the project, we wanted to come out, with bigger hours. I didn't want to be closed a day of the week or something. So those are the hours we're looking at, probably. A little bit different for the cafe. The cafe will stay, open up earlier as a cafe, stay open later as a bar. The co-op, when they come into the fold in March, I'm assuming that they'll have hours tradition, sort of comparable to what they have right now, but we'll see.
Great, thank you. So is the plan and the model for this for people to eventually get their own place after they've been in the food stall for a while, or is it more that this is their space?
Yes and no. So we're not pushing you out. I could see somebody staying there for 20 years, or longer. We're talking about generational wealth. This could go on for longer, right? That could be one way. Another path could be, this doesn't work for you. You get out of this in 3 years and you might feel singed but you're not distraught in the same way that you would be opening up a place on your own. We don't want you entirely just financially crippled by this experience, right? So that might be the one way. Another way would be you open up other locations. You know, this serves as your base. We've seen that happen in Midtown Global. And if someone wants to, I think there's a couple of people that, you know, their dream is to launch a their own place and make their own rules. I mean, I don't think we're putting too much pressure on people to sort of like follow our rules. But, you know, when you have a group of eight people, we all have to follow certain rules. And that doesn't always work with the sort of entrepreneurial spirit, right? So I think some people really, a couple of people do look forward to striking out on their own, establishing their own places. But what a great way to get started.
Absolutely. So in the beginning of your presentation, you were talking about how it was a parking lot. So what will the parking lot or parking situation be? Is it going to be kind of street parking around and folks kind of have to find their own place to park? Or what is there a plan, I guess, for that?
We got a plan. So the first plan was, oh, let's put parking under the building. And then we discovered, I think, that a parking spot underneath the building, I think it's $28,000 per spot. So just multiply that by 100 or 200. And then we realized that there is behind us, underneath, just past the bridge, which is actually really close. It seems really far away if you just look at it, but if you walk it, it's very close. There's an enormous parking lot in the trolley lot, 300 plus spots. And we felt like the money would be better devoted to making that walk feel more pleasant, safer, and devoting money and efforts to accessing that parking lot. There are 29 spots on the site itself. I forget how many are ringing the site. But it's more than you think. But then you've got the 300 in the trolley lot. So the trick right now is we're in conversations with the trolley lot and our neighbors over at the rescue mission and the city to see how we can make that lot feel like a something that doesn't give you pause. You know, even to the point of we're working with the city in Clinton Street, rather than going one way, we'll go two way. Things like that will help quite a lot.
Adam, at the beginning of your presentation, you talked about a couple of the different partners, and I saw, you know, Rescue Mission was listed there, and you just talked about them. So they're obviously going to be one of your close neighbors. Are you working with them in terms of partnership, potentially hiring folks from there? Or, you know, what does that partnership kind of look like?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of, I should just mention hiring for a second here. We will be having a job fair. We're looking at latter part of November for all the stalls, for the janitorial, for the security. I really wanted to hold it in the building, but I don't think we're going to be quite there. So we're talking with the Red House right now about hosting us for a job fair in late November. And yes, the Rescue Mission, we've been talking with them a lot as well about the job fair, but also about a program akin to something they do out of Troy, New York, in a very similar situation where they're working with their local mission on an ambassador program. And this notion of having ambassadors who can be, you know, wearing Salt City Market uniforms, sort of ringing, you know, a couple in the building, on the exterior of the building, helping you walk your groceries, and really working with the security team and with our vendors to be that other layer of, you know, I would say hospitality, but also just being aware of what's happening on the street and who have an intimate knowledge of, you know, how, who's on the street and who's coming from the rescue mission, and just, you know, might know somebody by name. You know, it really helps to say, okay, I know what that person's working with, what they're struggling with. Here's how we can work with that person. You know, here's who do we need to loop in. You know, and for our own part, we're working. We've got a mental health first aid training coming up for the whole team here, so that all of us know how to respond appropriately when someone is going through something that they're struggling with. It's hard for someone to see. I think it's just a really nuanced kind of a response, and having that ambassador program in place, hopefully in the first, I want to say the first quarter of the new year, Q4 Q1 or Q2 of the new year that will be in place. I think that's going to help a lot in those efforts.
Thank you. And we've got time for one more question, and it's kind of a loaded question. How will you measure success of the market?
Ooh. How will we measure success in the market? Okay. I mean, I think I just go back to the, you know, bedrock principles here, you know, and of our mission, which is a two-pronged mission, is are people who own stalls, who are my first charge, are they making a good living? You know, and that's not going to be, listen, that's, put aside COVID, you know, even in sort of quote unquote normal times, I can't answer that question 6 months out, right? It's businesses or it's a time of mistakes and, you know, but I'm hoping maybe ambitiously by a year out to say people are firmly on the path of building what we call generational wealth, right? That they are headed in a really good direction and that they have tight operations and that they are maximizing, you know, profitability and that they're enjoying themselves, friends. And then the second thing, aside from our entrepreneurs being successful, is having that space that really does feel like an agora. I think we do something like that with the regional market on Saturdays, but we're not good at it, you know, as a city. I literally was driving somebody in the site in last winter while I was still in a parking lot, and he's of Egyptian descent. Somebody I really trust, and he said, like, oh, this is just for white people. And I said, wow, you're a friend of mine. You're literally in my car where I'm driving you to show you the space, and you're saying that. So like that, there are some real stories, a lot of them true, that we have in our heads about one another and about what spaces that we are welcome in. So if we are at all successful in working with community partners, with our talented vendors, to signal like, no, this is really a space that like everyone should feel welcome in and curious about and take a lot of civic pride in. We want to show Syracuse off to itself. If we can hit those two things, that's all I care about.
Great. Thank you so much, Adam. Please join me in thanking Adam Sundman.
Thank you so much. Take good care. We'll see you soon.